Kraft is with us this morning. He's the president and CEO of ISC Logix Industries. And how are you this morning?
Good, sir. Thanks very much.
It's great. Now, we had talked several months ago. We talked about preparing concrete for flooring installations in general. This morning, I wanted to ask you specifically about installing over resilient floor covering and removing pH from concrete, which is an important function, I understand, in this. Fill us in on that.
Yes, sir. The previous discussion we had was regarding the substrate surface porosity or absorption prior to installing resilient flooring. And what today with pH, we wanted to bring out or make sure your listener base was aware of, is that very recently there was a substantive change within ASTM F710. And for installing resilient flooring on concrete, ASTM F710 is the granddaddy document. It's the standard practice for preparing a concrete slab to receive resilient flooring. And that substantive change regarding pH is that the first time that F710 was published was 1998. And since 1998, for the past 23 years, evaluating substrate surface pH has been in that document as a requirement. All slabs shall be tested for pH before installing resilient flooring. Just last month, that requirement was removed. It's no longer within F710 as a requirement.
So why did they do that?
Well, good point. I believe the intent was that a standalone pH document be created before the requirement was removed from F710, so that the resilient flooring industry, the adhesive manufacturers, would still have a guide standard to point to if their products required pre-installation pH testing, and also to accommodate who knows how many project specifications might be out there that require pH testing and point to F710. So again, as a sequence, this all began probably 2016. The idea was to remove pH from F710, but at the same time or before, create a standalone standard so that the industry was not left without. The way things worked, COVID, one of them actually ended up being in front of the other. And now as it stands, the pH got removed, leaving the industry with no common document to point to. So as it stands right now, there's a no man's land, if you will, that some installers, some manufacturers, if their literature points to F710, could be caught in merely for the fact of timing and the lack of a standalone document.
I see. Now, is there something, we're talking about vinyl and installing vinyl over concrete. Is there something unique about vinyl separate from other floor covering materials?
Well, I think really it pertains to the adhesives that glue those products down. So in big scheme of things, it would be the resilient flooring products. And it really pertains to the adhesives, specifically maybe the wet set adhesives, products that might have a little more liquid in them. Because when you apply a liquid to a dry concrete substrate surface, it can create an elevated pH reaction. Whereas think about a carpet tile, your pressure sensitive adhesives, those aren't likely that the chemistry, the makeup of those adhesives are not likely to induce an elevated pH reaction. So yes, when it comes to, as you say, vinyl, many of the resilient flooring products, there's quite a number of adhesives out there with enough residual liquid in them that can create an elevated pH situation that, if not addressed appropriately, once that impermeable resilient flooring goes down, there is enough pH alkalized to create a breakdown that actually the adhesives themselves can break down. So a lot of manufacturers still require pH as a pre-installation evaluation. But again, we are in a temporary no man's land where there is no specific identified process or requirement for pH testing. So there's a bit of an issue right now that may or may not manifest depending on what document somebody refers to or a project team tries to refer to, simply because those instructions have been pulled from F710.
Are most plugged into some type of pH requirement, and do they test for it?
That's actually a really good question. I would offer that most project specifications, remember, it's the project specification that really tells the installer what they're supposed to do for the project, because that becomes part of the contract, if you will, well, actually, between the general contractor and the owner. And so the almost all of your 09 flooring specs, regardless of flooring product, but very often the resilient products, they're going to say test for pH. They may say test in accordance with F710. They may say follow the manufacturer's instructions, but it's going to be embedded in there in most current ongoing project specifications and even things that are coming out. So yeah, I would argue that most project specifications do point to a requirement to test for pH. So again, if that project installer then turns to the current version of F710, there's nothing in there, leaving that gap. Now, many of them will go on and do what they've always done. They may use the pH paper, or they may use electronic meter, but as a standard description of how to do it from an industry perspective, that has been eliminated for this short time. Now, there is another document in process right now that we hope to see approved this November. But again, the substantive change as a requirement, most everyone in the industry pointed to F710, that requirement no longer exists within that document.
What was the rationale behind changing this from all these years? You know,
that's actually a really good question, and it requires a little bit deeper dive into the way ASTM documents work. Within the ASTM process, there is a book, the Form and Style Manual, that describes how certain ASTMs are supposed to be written. And F710 is what's called a standard practice. And what the guiding principles of a practice states is that a practice within it can't have what's called a test method. And the way pH was described within F710, it told you what to do, how to do it, and gave a result. Well, that's the basic definition of a test method. And so based on the rules of a practice, ASTM said you cannot do that. So I brought up the discussion in saying the way F710 is currently written, pH should not be in there, but it should be a standalone document. The committee agreed, it was removed, but it was moved before the standalone document received final approval. Again, that document, the standalone document, has been in, I'm the technical, I'm the principal author and technical chair. There's been a fine group of people working on it. But again, we lost probably three sessions of in-person meeting due to the COVID situation. And so that's delayed adoption, and adopting or creating a new standard is a more time consuming process than maybe removing something from an existing standard. So again, these weren't even parallel tracks. The new standard that we hope to get approved in November was set in motion several years ago, but it was much easier to edit and remove from F710. It's just that nobody was able to match up and say, wait a second, we should really hold off on this vote And the way it occurred is right now we're in a situation where there's no common standard. But it was pulled out, one, for procedural, and two, as a requirement. And because not all products require pH, a lot of the manufacturers are saying, hey, our products don't require that. So to make it a requirement across all concrete slabs is really not necessary. So that's the there was two reasons why it was pulled out. One, procedurally, it should not be in there. Two, not all resilient flooring products require it. Therefore, it should not be in the biggest standard requiring in all slabs. So the new standard allows manufacturers to pick and say, yes, we want pH testing, do it to the standard. Or if a manufacturer doesn't require, they just don't require it.
What does pH bring to the party in the first place? Does pH change over time?
Well, in most cases, when you think about concrete or cementitious underlayments, when they do their thing, they set up and get hard. If everything does what it's supposed to do, then by and large, surface or near surface pH is no big deal. These residual alkalis, if you will. But there are certain situations where there could be a higher concentration of residual alkalis at the surface of the concrete, basically where that adhesive is going to touch. Okay. So as long as it's dry, no big deal. However, in the unique occasion where you have a higher concentration of surface or near surface alkalis, and you have certain adhesives with a larger concentration of water, when they meet, that near surface or surface alkalis could go into solution, creating a fairly high alkaline environment. And those alkalines can then turn around and break down the glue. Literally cause the glue. It's called alkali hydrolysis, and it literally causes the adhesive to literally break down, go to a goo, obviously lose adhesion, maybe create indoor environmental issues. So that's really the concern with pH. That's what it brings to the party. Pretty much once the concrete or cementitious underlayment has hardened and done its thing, it's not really bringing anything good to the party. Anything it brings could have some serious negative consequences. So you really got to make sure that that near surface or surface alkali, by just adding a drop of water, is not going to shoot through the roof, so to speak, when you apply one of these certain types of adhesives.
When there's a claim, can you pretty much tell right off the bat what the problem is in this area anyway?
I think if I said yes, I think a number of your listeners may blow up my phone or email. Wow, I would offer in regards to the very 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 specific issue of whether there was an alkali hydrolysis situation where the pH of the adhesive itself was attacked and broken down, I believe that is a fairly direct way that can be assessed. And how you would do it is you would pull up the failed flooring, and if it's in a liquid state, that can be assessed right then and there for pH. Because to assess pH, it has to be in solution. So let's say it's a hard set adhesive and you pull it up and there's all these trowel ridges. If you were to take your electric pH probe, which is the preferred, and put it against that hardened adhesive, nothing's going to happen. And just by visually looking at it, the adhesive is not broken down. Let's say a pressure sensitive adhesive, you pull back a carpet tile or say some of the resilient products with an LVT plank or whatever, you pull it back, you look at the adhesive, you touch it, it's still tacky. There's no visual indication that there's been breakdown. There's no liquid there. Pretty much that's not also going to be an evidence of a pH breakdown. However, if you pull back a VCT, you pull back some resilient, and it's visibly liquid, and you test that, and that pH is, say, in the 12, 13 range, that's a pretty indication that, you asked before, can it change over time? That is a very, very good, I would argue, clear indication that, yes, something has changed. And also, too, to corroborate that, all these adhesives, they publish their pH range that if you were to test it in the bucket, hey, our pH of this glue is 9. Well, if it goes down and it cures, there's nothing that should cause that pH to go up unless something else acted on it. So if you pull back your floor and you see a gooey mess and you test that, and that pH now is 10, 11, 12, 13, then one could argue that a significant change occurred that induced those alkalis to go off the charts. And that's a pretty indication of what caused that adhesive to break down.
Are there other factors in the whole preparation process that are pivotal or that could have some effect on what we're talking about?
Yes, sir. That's an absolute excellent question. And it kind of dovetails back to our previous talk on substrate absorption and porosity. There's been a lot of literature. It goes back as far as 2003, 2006, 2007, that talks about it could be a short-term but relatively rapid impact of the introduction of a wet-set water-based, more water-based or residual water-based adhesive to a concrete substrate that shows that very, very quickly after the introduction of that kind of adhesive to the slab surface, the pH of the concrete can shoot up pretty quickly. However, there's a caveat that there's two important caveats to that. One is that there's been billions of square foot of flooring very successfully installed that indicates that this rapid increase may be only a short-term manifestation, and that it's not really detrimental long-term to the cured adhesive. So that's one. So this is not like Chicken Little, sky is falling, all flooring is going to fail. That's not meant that was said. The other caveat is it also goes to the ability of that surface of the concrete or the substrate surface to absorb some of that residual liquid. So if you had an absorptive surface, underlayment or very poor substrate, which is what we talked about before, and that substrate can absorb some of that extra water and that adhesive, the indication is that type of situation is less likely to lead to a future issue than if that same kind of glue was applied to a non-porous, non-absorptive substrate, meaning that extra water has no place to go. It's sitting in contact with the concrete. Then if there is surface or near surface alkalis, now you have the alkalis, now you have the excess liquid, that liquid has no place to go, then it can create a solute that's really going to be detrimental to the flooring installation. So that's the other factor, that substrate surface porosity absorption, and whether or not it's going to potentially lead to a future pH issue. So the two are pretty combined, actually.
How are these requirements determined in the first place? I mean, I imagine you do that for every product and every substrate, but what's the process you go through to determine what these preparation requirements are?
Oh, wow. Well, I would give a shout out to the ASTM F6 Committee on Resilient Flooring, and don't let the title fool you. It really encompasses a broad range of flooring products. And so I think the membership base right now is in the 130 to 140 range of industry professionals, from flooring product manufacturers, adhesive manufacturers, underlayment, moisture testing, moisture mitigation, those agencies that actually conduct tests. But it's really made up, I would argue, the gross percentage of manufacturers, both from adhesives and flooring products. And it's a consensus standard. It's a consensus body. And from a shared perspective, this body works to try to create industry standards that pretty much apply across the board, non-product specific. And so actually, that kind of takes me back to why was pH pulled from F710? Because it's a consensus document, when it first came out, it said all slabs shall be tested for pH. Well, a lot of products came out within F710 and says, or within the F6 committee and said, our products don't require that. So making that a requirement for all products is really not something we want. And the committee talked about it. There are those manufacturers that still want it. There are those manufacturers that do not want it. So the decision on how to approach it was, okay, let's create a separate standard. So those that do want it can point to it. Those that do not need it or want it do not have to, but simultaneously or subsequently, then let's pull it out of F710. So what we've gone through right here is kind of a micro process of how these standards are developed, just in regards to pH. So here is something that has been around for 23 years that everybody is supposed to do on all concrete, to now, short term, nobody has to do, but still required by some manufacturers. And the same thing for substrate porosity. The committee got together, reviewed it, consensus document, and that ended up creating a new standard. So really it's the F6 Committee on Resilient Flooring from a consistent basis of manufacturers that oversee, review, bring to life, edit old standards, and create new standards.
In reading some of this information and realizing that I had no knowledge whatsoever, other than our earlier conversation, are there requirements or are the goals, do they involve something other than adhesion? And I saw the word safety in there as one of the requirements, and I wanted you to expand on that a little bit too.
Yes, sir. That's a good one. One of the resources that discusses this is a document going back 2007, CENTEF, and they're one of Europe's largest independent building science research organizations. And one of the things that really, really came to light was a big focus of conversation in this country, kind of started in the late 70s, really exploded in the 80s, was sick building syndrome. Part of that actually manifested in 1992 with the Green Label Program, where a lot of the VOCs, the adhesive formulations were fundamentally altered from a more VOC content to a more water-based content to lower the VOCs. All that was driven really due to indoor, at the time they called it air quality. Now it's kind of been expanded to indoor environmental quality for safety of the built environment for the occupants. So let's go back to pH. If you have a situation where you have alkali hydrolysis going on and your flooring adhesive is going to goo, there's a variety of things that can manifest. First of all, depending on the chemical composition of the resilient flooring, when I say high pH, think about pool chlorine, think about bleach, but possibly even a higher pH, and then think about a vinyl or PVC product being in contact with that. Those products could start breaking down, themselves could start off-gassing and releasing things into the built environment, other indoor environmental quality issues as far as just air. Trip fall hazards and things like that. So really, alkali hydrolysis, once it happens, when you have products exposed to a high pH, I mean, high pH will dissolve skin. It can be a very caustic substance. And then now you have various chemicals breaking down in contact with something else that's a chemical. If that then starts breaking down, So that's really why when I say safety, it's for the air quality of the occupants. And normally, in full disclosure, in most of these things manifest before that ever comes to that point. But those are things that could occur, and all that's discussed in that building report from CENTEF from 2007. But those are some of the things that that manifest over time if this issue is not addressed or is not protected against.
I've gotcha. How do these requirements work with manufacturers' instructions? I mean, are they counter something?
No. That's actually a great point. It's a great point. The idea of the ASTM standards is really meant to be in support of the manufacturer's instructions, as opposed to be counter to the manufacturer's instructions. And again, we can use pH as an example. For 23 years, regardless of what a manufacturer said, all slabs were supposed to be tested. Now, the goal is only those manufacturers whose products are sensitive to pH change can require. And the new standard, proposed standard, what it says is if the project specification or the manufacturer's literature requires pH, then do what that manufacturer says. So it's really, it's an if-then clause. If it's required by the manufacturer or the product spec, project specification, do what those documents say. If it's not required by the manufacturer of the project, then it's not required. So it's really meant to support the manufacturer's literature. That's the intent. And we're definitely going that path, but in regards to this topic, kind of the horse got before the cart and it's been yanked before the new standard got published. But the idea really for the ASTM documents is meant to be in full support of all manufacturers. That's why they're consensus documents. And by the way, that's why all these manufacturers participate in ASTM, because they want to make sure that, one, their equities are being looked at, and two, they're not being required to meet something that doesn't apply to them.
I've got you. An installer, somebody writing specs, how can they access this kind of information? Is there a way to do that online or other?
Well, the best way for an installer, and unfortunately, this may or may not occur. I can't say all because then it would. I haven't looked at all, but practically all, or nearly all, or for all intents and purposes, all manufacturers state that their online literature has precedence. So even if somebody is following the literature on the bucket, still the literature online is what takes precedence. So what any person can do, whether a project specifier, whether an installer, whether they're a StarNet dealer or distributor, and they want the most current information, anybody should always go to the particular manufacturer's literature. That really is the sole source of the most current information for a particular product. When it comes to ASTM standards, they would go to ASTM, the organization. All these standards are readily available. They're not free, but they're readily available. So it's not like this information is not accessible. One other source that a project specifier, an architect, design team member has are the product reps. A professional quality product representative, one of their requirements should be is to stay abreast of all the current standards. So this particular interview today, just to be aware that right now pH is not required by ASTM. It's not to say that it's not required by manufacturers. It's just something that it comes up. They then can discuss professionally with any project specifier they may have. So those are the sources a project specifier would use. Those are the sources an installer would use. But again, you can always go online for the most current information.
Just in summary, let me just ask you, if you would, to sum this up for people out there, preparing concrete for the installation of resilient floor covering, what are the key things they should keep in mind?
One, that it's no matter how long we do it, the standards keep evolving. Two, if you've got an old copy of F710, I highly encourage you to buy the most current one, because there were two fundamental and very important changes that just occurred last month. One, pH has been removed. That's not to say pH is no longer required. Please check with your manufacturers and project specs. Two, our last talk, Dave, we talked about pH or porosity absorption testing. That test, though a standalone document, has also now been incorporated on F710. That test is now required for all concrete surfaces. That is a major, major change. All slabs, regardless of age, shall be tested for substrate absorption. So not only in 2016 did that become its own standard, it has now continued to evolve in importance that all slabs are required to be tested before flooring installation. So please, if you've got an old copy, get the new one. Moisture testing is still in there. pH is no longer in there, F710, but it does not mean it's not required. Porosity testing, if you're not doing it, please, all slabs receiving resilient flooring products are required to have that test now. So please, please, please get the most current standard and review those changes. Mm-hmm. So those are the three bullets really I would throw out right now from the current state of affairs.
Very good. Dean, I really appreciate you you sharing this important information. Thanks very much.
Hey, thanks so much, David. Have a great day.
Yes, sir. You too. We've been talking with Dean Kraft. He is the president and CEO of ISE Logix Industries. This is Talk Floor.